From the Denker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Coming up on the program, a conversation with Zach Frankel, Executive Director of the Utah Rivers Council, on water use and conservation in the state.
What's happening is an industry that is out of control is proposing to destroy these priceless aquatic ecosystems that are recreational economies for hundreds of thousands of hardworking Utahns for no other reason than to make a quick buck.
Also, the discovery of a new species of dinosaur in Utah's Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument.
It has these amazing horns over its eyes that are curved and pointing forward, almost to the tip of the snout. It's got an oversized nose.
That, plus your summary of local news just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. Thanks again for joining us for The Rundown, a local news and information show where we look at emerging stories, current events, politics, and ideas. Coming up later in the program, we speak with Zach Frankel, Executive Director of the Utah Rivers Council, about calls from a coalition of nonprofits for an audit of the Utah Division of Water Resources and about plans for large-scale water infrastructure projects that he calls a farce. But we begin today with a summary of today's top local news stories. First up, scientists announced today the discovery of a new species of dinosaur, another in the growing list of the ancient creatures found in Utah's Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. Scott Sampson, former chief curator at the Natural History Museum of Utah, who is now with the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, says the newly discovered species is a distant relative of one of the best known dinosaurs.
Today we announced a brand new horned dinosaur, a distant relative of Triceratops, which at least the six-year-olds will know about. And this particular animal was found in southern Utah in Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. It's 76 million years old.
So what did this creature look like?
It has these amazing horns over its eyes that are curved and pointing forward, almost to the tip of the snout. It's got an oversized nose. And in fact, the name, its new name, Nasutoceratops, means big nose, horn face, which sounds like an insult, but it actually is pretty descriptive of the animal.
The discovery was described Wednesday in the British scientific journal Proceedings of the Royal Society B, and at a press conference at the Utah Museum of Natural History. Sampson said that getting the bones of this ancient creature out of the remote location where it was found was a massive undertaking.
Like most of these big animals that we find, I mean, you know, they weigh a couple of tons. So to get these out of the ground, we have to wrap them up in plaster burlap bandages, and then we airlift them with helicopters. I mean, Grand Staircase was the last area in the lower 48 states to be formally mapped because it's so rugged. And even today, there's only four or five roads through the whole 1.9 million acres, so the only way to get these two-ton animals out of there is very carefully and with helicopter support.
So far, Sampson says this is the only dinosaur of its kind.
You have in front of you over there on the table the only reasonably complete skull of this animal on the planet. There are two other isolated specimens that have been found, but really there's only one in the world. We are announcing it here because, of course, this specimen came from here. The bones will go permanently into the Natural History Museum of Utah collection, and it will be exhibited here as well.
Utah lawmakers have given preliminary approval to the first of several changes to the committee investigating Attorney General John Swallow. A committee of House and Senate members approved legislation this morning, exempting the committee from some open records and public meeting laws. The legislation also addresses issues regarding the committee's powers of subpoena and the ability to offer immunity. The House of Representatives has tasked a special committee with looking into allegations of misconduct surrounding Swallow. The Attorney General has repeatedly denied any wrongdoing. The legislature reconvened for a special session Wednesday to adjust the powers of the investigative committee and to ensure special counsel or private investigators from outside of Utah can be brought in to help with the investigation. And in a related story, the Utah Attorney General's office is removing itself from the prosecution of a convicted businessman who's facing new fraud charges. Mark Jensen was trying to force the recusal of state prosecutors, claiming Swallow and his predecessor Mark Shurtleff tried to exploit his legal troubles years ago. Jensen claims Shurtleff and Swallow offered or suggested he would get protection from regulators in exchange for cash and spa vacations. Both Shurtleff and Swallow have denied the allegations. The Attorney General's office says in court papers filed today that while no justification exists to remove it from the case, it will step aside anyway. The papers say that Jensen has created an appearance of impropriety that can only be resolved by a switch in prosecutors. Swallow spokesman Paul Murphy says his office is looking for a county attorney to take over the case. A new statewide partnership has been formed between hunters and other groups that rely on the hunting economy, such as hotels, wildlife associations, and shooting supply stores. The group Hunting Works for Utah hopes to promote hunting in the state. Republican Representative Curtis Oda is a co-chair for the group.
Many citizens don't realize the impacts and how exactly commerce works and what kind of role hunting plays in the economy.
Every year, about 200,000 people hunt in Utah and spend $550 million. This translates into about 12,700 jobs, according to a Congressional Sportsmen's Foundation study. Adam Massey is the other co-chair. He's also director of the Vernal Chamber of Commerce. Massey says that the shooting community also makes an impact with a major competition in Vernal.
We get over 250 competitors. They also bring their families, their motorhomes. As Representative Oda says, they buy fuel, they eat in our restaurants, they stay in our motels, and it's a huge ripple effect in our community.
The group says they plan to monitor public policy decisions and weigh in on hunting-related issues that impact Utah jobs. A new federal study ranks Utah at the bottom in the nation in per-pupil spending on education. The National Center for Education Statistics report, made public on Tuesday, analyzed public school expenditures and revenues in 50 states and Washington, D.C. The Las Vegas Sun newspaper reports that the national average in per-pupil spending was $10,658 during the 2011 fiscal year. Utah spent the least of all the states at $6,326 per student. That's a little more than $4,300 less than the national average. Washington, D.C. spent the most at $20,793 per student in the 2011 fiscal year. And finally today, over 60% of people who are blind in the United States are unemployed. While the numbers are not known in Utah, there are 37,000 individuals who have a visual disability that may make it more difficult to get a job. But a multifaceted project is helping blind teenagers and young adults gain the skills they need to function in life, college, and work. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has this story.
On the blindhow.com website, there are tutorials on daily living skills such as how to use an ATM, tips on cooking, and how to travel by air. There are also tabs for entertainment, employment, education, and many more resources to help people who are blind better navigate their world. In one audio segment, Dr. Tim Cords talks about how he became a physician, the difficulties and negativity he faced, and his ability to adapt, creating software to hear the atoms in proteins, and to use skills like touch to identify the nerves and muscles during the anatomy portion of his training.
I still recall that first day at medical school. We'd done a little gross anatomy where we dissect cadavers. I had the smell of preservative on my hands, although I had washed as best I could. I sat down in the corner of the lounge to eat my sandwich, and a senior student came up to me, and he said, "Why are you here?" And I mumbled something like, "Well, this is where I thought you were supposed to eat lunch." But that isn't quite what he meant. And it was a reminder to me that when you're doing such things, resistance is real. And the way I like to think about resistance is that if everybody likes what you're doing, you're probably not doing anything worthwhile.
Cords is now a successful psychiatrist. The website was created by the Utah chapter of the National Federation of the Blind. The group has also started a unique project in partnership with the Utah Department of Workforce Services to better train teenagers and young adults skills that they will need throughout their lives. Adam Rushforth is the director of Project Strive, which stands for Successful Transition Requires Independence, Vocation, and Education.
So our goal is to help individuals ages 13 to 26 who are blind or visually impaired to achieve self-reliance, whether that's socially, economically, in their career, educational,
One main focus of the project is to help participants develop the skills needed to develop careers and find employment, says Rachel Stewart with the Department of Workforce Services.
You know, when you look at the unemployment rate for adults who are blind, it's very high. It's much higher than the national average. I've read a couple of different studies, and it's anywhere from 60 to 80% of blind adults that are not employed. And so that's really astronomical.
Project Strive has monthly meetings and provides one-on-one mentoring to teach everything from how to use technology to how to cook, build a resume, and navigate a college campus. They also provide for older participants internship opportunities, says Rushforth.
Like someone wants to be a meteorologist, and so she's working with the Weather Center and working with Forest Services. Another wanted to be a work with family therapy, and so she's working with a group, a private company that does family and group therapy and different things like that. And so we try to match their career goals with what they're doing.
Stewart says what some people might not realize is that there's a lot of pressure on people with a visual impairment to do some of the things people with normal vision take for granted. She adds, sometimes these life skills need to be learned first.
I met a young man a couple of years ago who had explained to me that he had enrolled in BYU and was going to school, and he found that, you know, he really didn't have the skills to cook for himself or to navigate the campus or, you know, get himself to class and those types of things. So he actually dropped out of school and was then participating in this Strive project so that he could have those skills and then be able to go back and finish school. So you have those challenges on top of just, you know, living on your own and going to school.
In a video posted on the Blind How website, individuals who have gone through the program talk about what they found the most useful. Tina Haskins took part in the career fair.
Well, what I liked most about the career fair was how hands-on and interactive it was. And we were given real-life scenarios and had to problem solve in interview, mock interview, and real-life situations. I also liked how the volunteers took time to teach us.
Stewart says one of the most important aspects of the project to her is that it teaches participants to have a positive attitude about their blindness and to not be limited.
Some of the activities they do, they bring in adults who have successful careers, and you know, they show them, you know, you can be a physician, you can be a engineer, you can do these things even with your blindness, and you know, so don't let it be something that holds you back. You know, have a positive attitude about it, and then it will, you know, you can find success.
The Strive project was originally supported in 2009 by funding from the Affordable Care Act, better known as the stimulus. But since 2011, the state has been funding the program. Rushforth says they work with roughly 50 people throughout the year. The project recently won a $10,000 award from the National Federation of the Blind that recognizes the most outstanding and innovative achievements in the blindness field. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
And that's our local news summary for today. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. Now on the program, we turn to our conversation with Zach Frankel, executive director of the Utah Rivers Council, who is calling for an audit of state water regulators. In our discussion, recorded earlier today, Frankel talked about that and about preserving Utah's waterways. So I wanted to start off by asking you about some recent news. In the past couple of days, you guys announced that you were calling for an audit of the Utah Division of Water Resources. Why do you want to see these guys audited?
Yeah, so we're part of the Utah Rivers Council is part of a coalition calling for an audit, a legislative audit of the Utah Division of Water Resources, because they are responsible for implementing water planning, water conservation across the state. And there's a number of problems that we've found in their dialogue about water for many, many years now. A couple weeks ago, announced with about seven or eight other nonprofit organizations in Utah that the agency needs to be audited, and we are releasing 10 reasons why over the course of the summer this agency should be audited. There's a long list of problems.
Can we hear about some of those?
So one of the problems at Water Resources, with the kickoff, was their reluctance to conserve water. So to give a little bit of background about water use in Utah, so the division claims Utah is using 295 gallons of water every single day. Every Utahan uses 295 gallons of water per person per day for the entire year. That water use figure is one of the absolute highest in the United States. In other words, Utah is the most wasteful water user in the United States for our municipal use. Hmm. And when we criticize how high our water use is, the division is actually opposed to water conservation, believe it or not. They have a phrase they like to use called Strong's Law, named after their own director of the agency, which basically is that if you conserve water, something has to die. So it's really problematic. That was the first reason why they need to be audited. You know, water conservation isn't about doing without. It's about doing without waste. And so to have the director of the agency responsible for water conservation running around telling legislators and the public that if you save water, something will die is a pretty bad statement to make when your job is to encourage people to save water.
So one of the things you guys say you're concerned with is that the Division of Water Resources says that if we don't carry out some large capital projects, we're going to run out of water. You don't see that as being the case. Tell me about these capital projects that are so concerning to you and your organization.
So the Division of Water Resources is really eager to spend billions and billions of dollars of taxpayer money in Utah to build some very large water projects. Their supposition is that we are running out of water, which is a total farce, completely untrue. And so, for example, they've spent $25 million to date just to do the planning, the environmental documents for the Lake Powell pipeline, a $1.5 billion proposed diversion of the Colorado to deliver water to the St. George area, which is, again, one of the highest per capita water users in the United States, probably anywhere in the United States. So they argue that this community in St. George is running out of water and they need to divert the Colorado River at Lake Powell for that population's water use, basically for them to water lawns or overwater lawns. That's one of them. Another one is the proposed $2 billion Bear River diversion, which would deliver water to Sully County and Weber County and Davis County. And it's another environmental disaster. So the division is pushing these projects and arguing that we need to raise taxes to pay for them starting right now and under this idea that we're running out of water.
Can I ask what maybe a little bit more about the – I know that the Bear River plan has been something your organization, Utah Rivers Council, has been fighting for quite a while. What is the Bear River diversion? I mean, is it a dam or is it when I hear diversion, I think of, you know, you dig a trench and bring it somewhere else. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the diversion is a canal of the Bear. It's not a dam. It's not a – at this point, it's not a dam is what they're talking about. Who knows if they'll try and put a dam back on there. But right now, they're talking about diverting the Bear. The Bear is an interesting river. It's kind of a little-known river. People may be familiar with – but it's one of the most critical aquatic ecosystems in the western U.S. because the Bear River provides over 55% of the surface water inflow to the Great Salt Lake every single year. Some years it might provide as much as 70% of the surface inflow to the Great Salt Lake.
So, Zach, some people might say, oh, but the Great Salt Lake is this saline, you know, salty, briny swamp out there in the west. Well, you know, why do we care if it's got water in it?
You know, the Great Salt Lake is the largest wetland ecosystem remaining between the Mississippi River and the Pacific Ocean. It's one of the most important wetland ecosystems in the Western Hemisphere. Just to get an idea of how important it is to migratory birds, there's 250 different species of migratory birds coming from every country in the Americas, North, Central, and South America, coming as far west as Siberia, and some species gathering in larger numbers than anywhere else on the entire planet. It's an incredible 8 to 10 million individuals that rely upon the Great Salt Lake, its wetlands, and its ecosystem as a whole to exist. And so if we divert the Bear River for the lawns of the Salt Lake Valley, then we will end up lowering the Great Salt Lake elevation and drying up, who knows, tens of thousands of acres of wetlands along its shorelines. It could have very devastating impacts on various species of migratory birds. So the idea that we would charge into that, in addition to the $2 billion of debt that this agency is proposing, simply because we are reluctant to stop eliminating water waste on our sidewalks, gutters, and streets is ridiculous and wasteful. And the agency responsible for planning our water needs to do a better job of really informing decision makers and the public about what's at stake here.
So, and that kind of leads me to a larger topic about, you know, water use in the West in general. And so the question I have is, what do you think we should do? How much should be done to conserve our water?
Well, first of all, there is no water crisis. The idea that we're running out of water is a farce. We really aren't running out of water in our municipal sector. 85% of the water used in Utah is for agriculture. Our municipal sector is, as in its entirety, is only using about 8% of our total water use. Most of that is outside the home for lawns. Much of the lawn water is for institutional users, University of Utah, state governments, golf courses. We need to stop wasting water, and we need to charge people what it actually costs to deliver water. We need to stop asking people or forcing people to pay property taxes on the value of their homes to lower the price of water. You know, Utah has the cheapest water rates in the United States. We have the cheapest rates because we collect property taxes on our homes. Most Salt Lake County residents are paying two different property taxes directly to water suppliers to lower the price of water, and that's why we have the cheapest water rates and the highest per capita use. It's just market economics. We don't do it with our natural gas. We don't do it with our electricity. So why do we do it with our water? And the answer is because the water suppliers, the government water agencies that impose these property taxes, are not elected into office. They're appointed into office. So they don't have to worry about being voted in by the people. And these agencies are the same entities that are proposing billions and billions and billions of dollars in water projects that will have a devastating toll on our fish and wildlife species.
So then what's the point? Why are these guys trying to build these projects? I mean, you're saying that there isn't a water crisis. There's not the need for these projects. Why the push to have these big projects?
You know, I was meeting with a legislator the other day, and he said it. He took the words right out of my mouth. He said, "Yeah, this is just pork," and that's really true. You know, if you're asked as an agency or the manager of an agency to choose between a $1 billion construction contract or go with less money by getting your consumers to use less water and therefore pay you less revenue, well, which are you going to choose, right? Their incentive is to sell water. Their incentive is to encourage people to use water. And that's why we have the cheapest water rates in the United States. And that cheap rates keeps our use high, and that high use is the justification for these multi-billion-dollar construction contracts.
You know, maybe for our listeners, Zach, you know, I think about your organization and I think of it as a conservation group, but here you are telling me that we're not running out of water. It seems like an unusual line for a group like yours. Can you help me maybe understand that a little bit better?
You know, it's an interesting question. We get a lot of people, all of my staff, people will run into us on the street and they will apologize for using water. They'll apologize for having grass. They'll apologize for having landscapes. And we always are just like, look, man, it's totally all right. Just relax. It's no big deal. You can have a lawn. It's not about that. We want you to use less water. We want you to eliminate waste, which is what it's really about. But it's not about doing without. It doesn't have to be about sacrifice. We want to conserve water, but we also need to make sure that we focus on protecting our rivers. You know, rivers provide habitat for 80% of Utah's wildlife species for at least a portion of their life cycle here in Utah. So if we don't protect our rivers, we're going to have more threatened and endangered species. We're going to have ecosystems being annihilated. We need to make sure that our rivers continue to flow. We have plenty of water in our municipal sector. We have plenty of ways to convert water from our agricultural sector while still protecting our farmlands. So there's an abundance of water here. So we need to take away the fear, and we need to make sure that we're actually doing water planning and not water politicking.
You know, Zach, I just read an article, I think it was in the Tribune a couple of days ago, about the amount of money that the hunting industry brings into Utah. You say that 80% of this fauna, you know, these maybe even big game animals, rely on these rivers. Maybe there's a natural ally there for you?
That's absolutely right. You know, hunting and fishing combined together provide over $1 billion to the Utah economy annually. And they're part of an entire recreational economy that is several billion dollars of economic activity just to Utah alone. So it's really important to understand that it's not just about fish and wildlife for fish and wildlife's sake. It's about the recreational economy that are attached to those ecosystems that are one and the same. I mean, one of the biggest economic activities that Utahns and Americans at large do is bird watching. Bird watching is a huge driver of travel and recreational input to the state of Utah. It's really remarkable. And that's part of the fish and wildlife ecosystem. They are inseparable. So it's not just whether or not we have threatened and endangered species. It's whether we are going to sustain a diverse economy for future generations or whether we're going to dry it all up so a couple of members of the water development industry can make a couple of bucks. Basically, we're proposing to destroy all these places out of waste and gluttony. It's not because we need it. It's just because we're wasteful. And that's something Utahns don't embrace. And we need to shine the light of day on that. We need some transparency that we don't need to do this. What's happening is an industry that is out of control is proposing to destroy these priceless aquatic ecosystems that are recreational economies for hundreds of thousands of hardworking Utahns for no other reason than to make a quick buck.
That was Zach Frankel, Executive Director of the Utah Rivers Council. A full version of this interview and all of the discussions we feature on this show can be heard at our website, kcpw.org. Tomorrow, we hear again from Clarine Nardi Riddle of the group No Labels on their unveiling of a package of bipartisan bills in Congress. That and your daily summary of local news tomorrow at 5 on The Rundown, here on KCPW. Thanks for joining us today for The Rundown from KCPW. Our program today was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next. Stay tuned.